You're listening to the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. You are now tuned in to the Roto Experts.
This is Roto Experts on Fantasy Sports Radio Network. Thanks for taking the time to hang out with us on this Good Friday. Chris Meany joined by the Hall of Famer, Scott Angle. Jake Seeley is not with us today, so this will be a much easier show to listen to. jokes aside, Jake is in New York. He's doing some drafting, Scott. So he also had Arizona in his final four. I saw him tweet that out today. So we give him a little bit of a boot. I know he's probably frustrated with Arizona, but he's doing some drafting today. So it's just you and I, partner.
Well, I'll be doing some drafting this weekend myself as we head into Tout Wars weekend.
Yeah, that's right. And we'll talk a little fantasy baseball, of course, in this show. We'll go through some news. Maybe I'll get some tips and who Scott's feeling in some of his drafts. Scott, how many drafts have you completed? You know, any serious ones so far? Or you just this is next weekend is the real one as we get into closer to baseball. Is that where you kind of typically wait for your drafts and, you know, a couple days before first pitch?
I've had one draft so far, a few mocks. And, you know, the next two are big for me, Tout Wars and then the Greenwich Street Tavern Baseball League on March 25th.
Yeah, so that's the big one. We'll talk some fantasy baseball in just a little bit. Yesterday we were talking football. We were going through some of the wide receiver positions, and we'll get to a couple that we mentioned yesterday a little bit more. But, you know, Oakland was busy yesterday for sure, Scott. And one thing I guess through this whole free agency period, I was a little bit surprised with is, you know, it's just weird to see a guy in Jordy Nelson who, you know, you look at the success he's had with Green Bay and Aaron Rodgers not around for the most part last year, and how Jordy Nelson really struggled. I mean, this guy was not startable, and most people just, Scott, they left him on the roster just because he was Jordy Nelson out of respect. And if you played him, you started him, he hurt you and he burned you. Now he's a member of the Oakland Raiders, signing a 2-year deal with the Raiders, $15 million, 13 guaranteed. Oakland goes ahead and cuts Michael Crabtree basically just minutes after. What's your thoughts on this whole deal? Can Jordy have fantasy relevance? What's your thoughts here?
I don't think a lot of people left him on the roster out of respect. I think it was the fact that Aaron Rodgers was coming back late in the year, and people thought that they could keep him for the playoff run, because I think a lot of people looked at his down years as definitely a relation to the quarterback situation there. They just didn't seem to have the connection with the backup whatsoever. You know, Brett Hundley just didn't seem to have any chemistry with him, and, you know, was going more to Devontae Adams and other players. When Rodgers came back for that one game, though, it's like Jordy, you know, really didn't produce much either. But I think the feeling must be around general managers and front office people around the NFL that was really playing with Brett Hundley is what dragged him down, and that he may have something left, because Seattle was also interested as well, you know, having maybe be the outside receiver there. So, you know, Jordy still got something to prove. This could go either way, though. Sometimes you see that these guys at this point in their career, and, you know, they end up coming up with the old proverbial fork in the road where they could go either way. And, you know, if he doesn't start playing well right out of the gate, people are going to think that Jordy Nelson is done. And I think he's a wild card as a number three fantasy wide receiver. That's the way I look at him right now.
Yeah, I think that's fair, a number three wide receiver. There are some reports and rumors that the Saints were interested. I think that may have been a better landing spot, certainly a fantasy standpoint. And, you know, probably a good real-life signing for the Saints as well. I mean, you already know that they're loaded. So across the board, just some career lows, you know, 9.1 yards per catch, only 482 yards. This is the lowest he's had since 2009 when he only caught 22 balls. Last year, only 53 catches across 50. 15 games, 88 targets, 6 touchdowns. And, you know, those touchdowns came early on in the season with Aaron Rodgers. So I guess the biggest thing is, how do you feel about Derek Carr? I mean, the community is in on him, out on him now. Last year, he was one of those guys that people wanted, and really just disappointing across the board. And really, altogether in Oakland, Marshawn Lynch wasn't all that successful. And for Derek Carr, as of today, due to collect his $15 million roster bonus. So it's a good day for him. The third day of the league year, and he's collecting $15 million. What do you think about Gruden? Gruden wants to go old school, Scott, and I know a couple of Raider fans that they don't feel all that comfortable with those kind of comments.
Old school in what regard?
Old school of just, hey, I want to bring back 1990 football is kind of his philosophy. And some Raider fans think maybe the game is kind of passing a little bit. I'm not completely buying into that because we've seen him in the booth. This guy is probably, you know, soaked up so much more knowledge, just taking in everything in the booth over the past few years. Do you think that this is a good fit? And from a fantasy standpoint, the Raiders also brought in Doug Martin. He's another guy who kind of didn't do a whole lot last year. So with all these pieces and Gruden there, what's your expectations with this Raiders team?
Well, first off, with Jordy Nelson, though, to go back to that real quick, if the Saints, Seahawks, and Raiders are all interested in him, you figure that they've seen something on film to indicate or that know something that he may have something left. So to me, that's encouraging because a lot of times the front office people will know more from a scouting perspective than we will. As far as Derek Carr, you know, there's been flashes of him being – maybe being able to be a top 10 fantasy quarterback, but there's never been consistency. And, you know, that's partly on him, but that's also partly on guys like Amari Cooper, et cetera. Crabtree was always reliable. He was never really surrounded by a consistent running game. The Seahawks said, the Raiders said they're not moving on from Lynch, and they have Martin there. The two of them are probably going to have to battle it out for the starting job or, you know, maybe to be the lead back there. Lynch... to me, what he was is the year before he retired, he was not quite himself. He was still adequate enough, showed some of his own self with the physical running, but didn't have the quickness that he and the cutback that he used to have in his prime. So he's not quite what he used to be, but he's not done either. Doug Martin's a total wild card. You don't know what you're going to get from him from year to year, even from week to week. He could rush for 200 yards 1 week and then minus three the next. You know, they have some other pieces there in the backfield. I think the Raiders are still a work in progress here that Gruden has to figure out. Having Jordy Nelson, if he can be – there are too many unknowns there, veteran unknowns, and you don't even know when Amari Cooper is going to be fully able to take that next step. So – a lot of things have to break right for the Raiders for them to perform well NFL-wise and fantasy-wise.
Certainly, absolutely. That's 100% correct. A lot of unknowns. And you're right. I mean, look at Doug Martin. He breaks into the scene as a rookie, 1,400 yards, 11 touchdowns, 4.6 yards per carry on 319 carries. And the next season, you know, he struggles with some injuries, so maybe we'll count that as a wash. And then 2014, he comes back. He has 11 games, 3.7 yards per carry, just 494 yards. And the following season, when everybody's out on this guy, he comes back and has 1,400 yards again and 6 touchdowns, 4.9 yards per carry. And over the past 19 games, under 3 yards per carry, and he's only racked up just over 800 yards. So certainly a wild card. He's somebody that, I won't lie, Scott, I thought, you know, he could bounce back last season, and the potential with Tampa, it didn't work out. He missed the first few games of the season, and you're right, you couldn't trust him from a nightly basis, game to game. Will you be in on Amari Cooper? I mean, I know the fantasy community is completely down on him. I know on this network, most people, it was a pass. I don't know how you felt heading into the draft, but for me, I was a Crabtree guy. I'm going to take Crabtree again for the second straight year, 2 rounds later over Amari Cooper, but there's no question Cooper has the talent. Are you going to be in on it? It's early, but if this guy's going to go again in the third round, is that someone you're going to take a flyer on? Is this too much uncertainty?
Third round. That's too early for me. To me,
no.
The way I look at these guys is I want guys that have proven it. And until you prove it, you know, I'm not going to take you that high. I know everybody's talking about the upside, but we've been doing that for 2+ years now, and we just haven't seen the consistent production. You know, 1 week the guy's doing nothing, the next he has a 200-yard game. You know, we have to, there has to be some consistency there, and there just isn't. And you need consistency to win in fantasy football. If he's still there in the fifth round, yeah, I'll take him, but he's not going to happen.
No, he won't even be a top 20 wide receiver for me, I don't think, heading into this season. So sticking with just Oakland and taking a side view here and just getting into the Ravens, because as I mentioned, Michael Crabtree no longer around. Michael Crabtree's a pretty good wide receiver. We've seen him now bounce back from his days in San Francisco where there's some off-field issues, some injuries. Crabtree's been a touchdown machine basically since his time in Oakland. So yesterday we talked about a couple things. We talked about Baltimore, Scott, and we mentioned John Brown. We mentioned Ryan Grant. Well, Grant has reportedly failed his physical. So he's just kind of out of the picture right now. And you're looking at the Ravens depth chart, it's even worse. John Brown right now, they're wide receiver one. We know about his upside. We know his talent. We understand that there's some off-field issues with him, some injuries, sickle cell, a lot of stuff with John Brown. Crabtree is somebody that they desperately need. We'll keep an eye on that whole situation. If Crabtree is a member of the Ravens, does this make you like this Ravens team a little bit more? Because yesterday, Scott, we were all on the same page. This team has a lot of work to do, and this is, you know, not a great football team. Certainly offensively, they're not.
I think they're desperate for a guy like Crabtree, and he can put up some pretty good PPR numbers there. John Brown's not a number one or number two NFL wide receiver. He's a number three because even when he's healthy, he hasn't been consistent. But Joe Flacco, all he likes to do is throw high percentage passes, you know, down the hash marks. This team's going to win with defense and a running game. You know, they talk about methodical. You know, it does get more methodical in the Ravens. I'd like to see Crabtree go to the Seahawks because, you know, just the storyline would be wonderful, you know, about Sherman on the 49ers and Crabtree on the Seahawks. And, you know, they could use maybe another guy after losing Paul Richardson.
Imagine if he went to the Rams and had to play with Talib. How would that work out?
Practices would be very interesting.
These guys would be fighting.
Yeah.
Practices would be very interesting. That's a good bet. How are you seeing the Seahawks shape up here? I mean, they're going through something that you – this is kind of new over the past few years, Scott. I mean, obviously they lose Jimmy Graham, Richard Sherman they lose. Are they going to lose Earl Thomas? You know, Richardson, we talked about Richardson yesterday. He's out the door now. Obviously, a guy like Crabtree would certainly help out that team. But what's your whole feel and thoughts here on Seattle?
Well, you know, I think everybody who knows on the network knows I'm a Seahawks fan, but I try to keep an objective perspective about it as much as I can, as much as the other guys tease me. You know, for anybody who says they're rebuilding, I disagree with that because the dictionary definition of rebuild is to basically build something back up after it's been torn down and destroyed. You know, they haven't been torn down and destroyed. They still have Russell Wilson. You know, they still have Bobby Wagner. They still have KJ Wright, Frank Clark, etc. And they still have Earl Thomas, but I'll get to that in a second. Right now, as they stand today, I think it's a remodeling and a retooling more than it is a rebuild, and I think they could still be a playoff team. When you can build around a franchise quarterback and the best middle linebacker and free safety in football, you know, you're not a 5-win team, I believe. You know, you have pieces there that you can build around, and what the Seahawks traditionally do is they wait out the first wave of free agency and don't get involved in any of those bidding wars, and then see what they can pick off, and you know, maybe trade for some draft picks, etc. So that's where I think they're at. That said, if they trade Earl Thomas, to me, then it gets much closer to a rebuild. To lose both Sherman and Thomas, and maybe have Chancellor never play again. You know, that to me, that's Earl Thomas is, you know, maybe the most important player on that team right now. And I think if they trade him, it would be a mistake.
Yeah, it'll be interesting. I agree. I think it's a retool. Anytime you have Russell Wilson and, you know, some of the other pieces that you mentioned, they still got Doug Baldwin there. They're still going to be successful. Yeah, it certainly is a retool. And I like what a lot of teams
it's
do.
Not
and
it's not a Super Bowl team
when
anymore.
They sit back,
you know,
through this whole.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
It's not.
Super Bowl
but
team,
I,
but it can still be a playoff team.
It's still, yeah, absolutely. It can still be a playoff team. I'm not ready to put San Francisco over them yet. I know all the hype with Jimmy Garoppolo. I'm not ready to say that San Francisco is a better team than Seattle right now. I still think the Rams are the team to beat inside that division, but I'm not ready to say that Seattle can't compete for a wild card spot. I mean, the NFC is extremely tough. It is tough. I mean, it's you look at the NFC and you look at the AFC, and this was my thing with Kirk Cousins. I mean, I get it. Kirk Cousins, he gets the fully guaranteed contract. He goes to play for Minnesota. They're one win away from going to the Super Bowl. They had such a solid team. But I was thinking to myself, wouldn't this just be a good situation if he just, yeah, we could laugh all we want about the Jets. I mean, they're not ready to win right now. But they have all this money. You look at the AFC and the lack of quarterbacks. You got an aging Tom Brady. You got an aging Big Ben. Phillip Rivers is near the end. You got a lot of just unproven guys. Some nice young guys coming up, of course. Deshaun Watson, one of them. You look over at the NFC, Scott. You're talking about the Rams. You're talking about the Eagles. I mean, the Cowboys had an off year. They're still solid. The Vikings, the Saints. There's a lot of good teams in the NFC. The path is a lot harder, and with Cousins just automatically just going to Minnesota, a lot of people are just automatically saying this is a Super Bowl team. I don't think that they're much better with Cousins than Case Keenum. Would you agree with that, or are you a Cousins guy?
I like Cousins more than I like Keenum. What Keenum did was incredibly impressive.
That much more, though?
Not expected, but I think Kirk Cousins is just a better, more talented quarterback, and he's never been surrounded like with a complete team in Washington like he will in Minnesota. If they can boost Keenum like that, they're going to boost Cousins further. But it's not a given that they're a Super Bowl team, but they're a Super Bowl contender.
Wow, is Jake ever missing out on DuckTales? I'd break his heart if he knew that this was playing. We'll be back. We got some more football and some more baseball here on Roto Experts. Keep it locked.
What if I were to tell you that there was a professional football league where you, the fan, got to draft the team and call the plays? Is that something you might be interested in? The Fan Controlled Football League is bringing managerial control to the fans. Visit fcfl.io to learn more.
Chris Meaney and Scott Angle hanging out with you today. This is the Roto Experts show here. As we're talking about Fantasy Factor for a second. Been playing a lot of Fantasy Factor myself. Anybody who knows me knows I like a little hockey. So Fantasy Factor, it's a perfect daily site for the casual recreational player. Flatter prize pools, smaller fields, and single entry contests only. That's what I like about it. You're not competing with a dozen lineups. You put your lineup in and you're good to go. And also, if you're playing hockey, you don't got to worry about the goalies. You're going to follow morning skates. You can just put in a team goalie, which is always nice. So Fantasy Factor always has fun contests going on. And this year, they're running a $100,000 home run derby. Simply sign up and enter fantasyfactor.com. So Scott and I talking some fantasy football. We'll get into some baseball shortly in just a little bit. Just want to run through some more news. Of course, we talked about Crabtree. We talked about Jordy Nelson, Doug Martin, the whole situation in Oakland. Ryan Grant fails a physical. So really, Baltimore in just a tough situation and just trying to find some wide receivers, some guys who can play offensively on that football team. Yesterday, we mentioned Rex Burkhead, Scott, about how he was going to be in New England. And we kind of joked, is it going to be the Patriots? Are they going to grab another back? Is it going to be relevant? They're looking at another ex-Cincinnati back, and it's Jeremy Hill, reportedly scheduled to visit the Patriots today. That can't excite you too much, does it?
The words Jeremy Hill really don't excite anybody except for Jeremy Hill. I don't even know why the Patriots are bothering
Hill's
with
friends,
this guy.
His family.
But, you know, are they going to try to revive his career somehow? If there's anybody can do it, you know, maybe it's Belichick and company, but you know, they're bringing Gillislee back as the inside banger, so I don't know, I'm perplexed by this, but you know, it is just
right
a visit.
If you're gonna have
to sign him, so
you're right, it doesn't mean they're gonna sign him. And but just say, if he were to sign there, like, would he just be the goal line guy? I mean, we can knock Jeremy Hill all we want. And we will a little bit, under 1,000 yards past 3 years, obviously hurt last year. First season in the league, 9 touchdowns. Year number 2, 11 touchdowns. Year number 3, 9 touchdowns. It's 29 touchdowns his first 45 games. I mean,
It's not bad. The yards per carry, those numbers are not great.
Yeah.
Would he just be the goal line guy? And that's kind of what Rex Perkhead was. So then you take away that value that Perkhead had last
year. Maybe it's some running back type of committee here with Burkhead and Hill and Gillisley. And
it's a mess, is what you're saying.
It only comes with Hill on there on the 1 yard line. You know, maybe he's the new Tommy Vardell.
Maybe he is. Yeah. It'll be interesting to see how it plays out. But you're looking at the Patriots, Scott, and they've lost some guys. They've lost some guys. I understand that they're Patriots, but they've lost some bodies, and not just offensively. You're not talking about just Danny Amendola or Deion Lewis. I mean, I just heard the clip of you and of Tony talking, and Tony and I talked about this yesterday just briefly. Solder, I mean, to lose your left tackle, that's probably arguably the most important position for the New England Patriots when you're looking at Tom Brady and his age to protect him. You lose your left tackle, that's a good addition for the Giants, and Eli Manning. That's a big loss, and I don't think enough people are talking about that, Scott.
Yeah, but, you know, the Patriots might move in to replace him. Yeah, I think Belichick will look to shore that up somehow. I think if we realize it's important, then he realizes how important it is.
You're giving Belichick that credit?
Yeah, he's earned it.
Yeah, yeah. He's earned for sure. Another signing yesterday, and we mentioned this, but it is it looks like it's official. Austin Seferian Jenkins, a 2-year deal with Jacksonville. Now, he reportedly wanted money up in near 14, 15, reportedly a $10 million deal, incentives to get a couple more million. Austin Seferian Jenkins showed up last year, Scott, and he was one of those guys who's also had a lot of hype over the past few years, and understanding the playbook has been an issue. Staying healthy on the football field has been an issue. Last year, he just was kicked off the field and from being practice. This was, you know, OTA's training day, really. He didn't understand the playbook and what was going on, and he wasn't in shape, and he was just let go. But Austin Seferian Jenkins had some good games last year. But this is still a Jags team that is going to run the football. When we were talking about Marquise Lee and their separation from Allen Robinson, all three of us came together and said this is still a team that wants to run the football. Austin Seferian Jenkins, to you, a tight end that you're after? Is it just going to be one of those streaming tight ends, a daily play, a cheap punt play? What's your thoughts on this move?
Not somebody I can depend on every week, but he has put some personal issues behind him. And when you look at a guy, and sometimes Mercedes Lewis catching 3 touchdown passes in a game, I think, you know, somebody's going to look to in the red zone a lot. I don't think yardage will necessarily be great. He'll be the type of guy who might be 4 catches for 48 yards and a touchdown on average.
What we're getting with a lot of tight ends, right? I mean, you saw it with Jimmy Graham last year. Jimmy Graham last year, I mean, this guy, it was under 10 yards per catch. He was really only targeted and did all of his damage in the red zone. In fact, all of his touchdowns came in the red zone, Scott. Is this much of the same of what you think you'll see with Jimmy in Green Bay?
Not quite.
A red zone
target? Not quite.
Target?
I don't think that he's built the same as Graham, whereas Graham, like, is this, you know, just former basketball talent who could just post people up, basically, in the end zone. I don't think that's Seferian Jenkins' skill set necessarily. With Jimmy Graham, he became much less effective over the last few years because of injuries, and also because I don't think he's regarded as a guy who can necessarily take every big hit that comes his way. He drops passes, he gets hurt, but in the red zone, he's just about uncoverable. I don't look at Austin Seferian Jenkins as uncoverable, you know, near the stripe. Yeah, that's why Jimmy Graham, it's unique. It's like they were basically throwing jump balls to him. You know, they were throwing basketball passes towards him. He would post defensive backs up.
Yeah, he would. He would. He'd post them up, box them out, and then he'd catch that 1 yard strike sure. Very, very interesting.
Seahawks didn't have a goal line back last year. They had Jimmy Graham.
No, they didn't. Yeah. You're right. They didn't. Yeah. And Green Bay, they got some backs who showed up last year, and Williams and Jones. It'll be interesting to see how this plays out with them. But Rodgers is a guy that likes to throw the ball in the red zone, too. I mean, 2 years ago when he had the complete season, I think it was only Drew Brees who had more passing attempts inside the 10 than Aaron Rodgers. It was him and Phillip Rivers and Aaron Rodgers. Those guys were throwing the ball inside the 10. But we know that the Saints, they got the two backs now. Those passing attempts came down. But Rodgers will have no problem throwing the ball from the 5 or the 10 to Jimmy Graham. Sticking with just some more news.
Yeah, just before you go on, sorry.
Yeah, go for it.
Just sorry about that. But
no worries.
They used to throw to Jordy Nelson so much in the red zone, and basically he replaces that dimension for them. And this is a guy that threw 8 touchdown passes to Richard Rodgers a few years ago. But, you know, Graham is what he is right now. You know, he's not going to be as big outside the 20s, but I think Rodgers will look to him a lot on, you know, first downs. He's never had quite the weapon like this, but, you know, Graham isn't the same weapon that he used to be. And this is the team that's always traditionally under Rodgers, like to throw more in the red zone than run it.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, Rodgers likes to get his. You know, he loves to do the check down. With Jimmy Graham, you know, 26 red zone targets last year. That was tied with Gronk and Cooper Kupp. They all three of them had 26. And if you go look at the year before, to your point with Jordy Nelson, and that's the, I mean, Rodgers was hurt last year, so that was all of this stuff. We already talked about Jordy suffering from Rodgers and not being in the lineup, but Jordy Nelson, 32 red zone targets, that led the league, and Davante Adams was third with 23 red zone targets. Now, mind you, they didn't have Lacy and some backs, but still, to your point, and what we're trying to get across to people is that Aaron Rodgers is still going to throw the ball inside the red zone.
Yeah, Lacy doesn't matter. So. Lacy didn't matter. You know, not having Lacy didn't matter. It's because they were still throwing the ball a lot in the red zone, even when they had Lacy. When people liked Lacy back then, it used to frustrate them.
Absolutely. And in fact, I said that Breeze 2 years ago in 2016 had the most passing attempts. It was actually Aaron Rodgers, 115 inside the red zone. Breeze, 112, and Phillip Rivers, 102. So there you go. Nothing's really going to change with Rodgers. He's going to throw the ball. He's got a nice, bigger weapon for him inside the red zone with Jimmy as opposed to Jordy. So here we go. I want to bring up just what Kyle Shanahan said with Jerick McKinnon, because, you know, a lot of hype with Kyle Shanahan and the 49ers and what he was able to do in Atlanta. And we kind of made the comparison yesterday with McKinnon and Tevin Coleman. Just a slight comparison. I think it was more than us, Scott. But, you know, with Shanahan's newest comments about how just getting lost watching Jerick McKinnon's game tape, this hypes people up. It may be funny to joke about, but I had a friend text me yesterday, and he's a big Kyle Shanahan fan. He loves Jimmy Garoppolo. He's buying into everything, and then he hears these comments getting lost, and it just excites him of what he can do with Jerick McKinnon. But again, does this make you change? Do you think he's full consistently? Can this guy touch the ball 20 times every single Sunday? I just don't know if I see that.
I don't think so.
I see maybe a seven to eight carry guy and a few catches.
I don't know if he's a 7-8 carry guy either. I think it'd be more than that. You know, maybe a dozen to 15 every week carries, something like that. You know, 11 to 14, something like that. A few catches. He can touch the ball 20 times, but six or seven of those could be receptions. And, you know, that's maybe the way they were looking at him. But they're gonna need another physical running back to complement him. I think, like, if they had LeGarrette Blount and Jerick McKinnon, you know, that might work out, or whatever physical rookie that maybe they could draft at some point within the first 3 or 4 rounds and kind of stick him in there. Because Jerick McKinnon, I remember getting at one point when Adrian Peterson was out, it's just like, I think it was, or it might have been last year, where he got, like, stoned like 3 or 4 consecutive times at the goal line as a runner. You know, it's just not who he is. You know, maybe Shanahan was watching the tape of that Chicago game too much, where he just exploded as an all-around player. You know, you got to remember, like, we have to make the distinction between a pure football perspective and a fantasy perspective. Yes, maybe Kyle Shanahan is thrilled by what he sees on film, but that doesn't mean that he's going to be able to put up consistent rushing numbers for a fantasy perspective.
Yeah, and that was the quote. I mean, there's so many things. This is the quote. There's so many things I like about him. Just visualizing how I would use him and the stuff that we would do. It's certainly exciting. And you're right. He's very, very explosive. And it's a huge bonus that this guy can catch, certainly, and what he can do after the catch. He just showed glimpses of that. I think that's a pro football scheming quote.
You know, that's not a fantasy quote. I'm excited about what we can do with him. You know,
right.
That means schematically, like, how he can challenge defenses and create mismatches and make big plays. He didn't say,
that's his biggest
I'm excited
strength.
That we can handle the ball to him 20 times a game and for us to be his pure lead running back as a bell cow.
But he's not, yeah, because he's not that guy.
He didn't say that.
There's no, and he shouldn't say that because he's not that kind of guy. No. No, and that's what I'm bringing up to you, and I was just getting your thoughts on if you think that he can be that guy to touch the ball 20-plus times. And let's be honest here, we're not seeing that a lot anymore. The bell cow backs, they're far in between. There's a few in between here. You look at the Philadelphia Eagles, the success that they had rotating through three or four backs. Look at the Patriots and what they've been doing for the past few years.
Yep.
I mean, that's the way to go here in the NFL is to be able to rotate through some guys, keep guys fresh. I mean, the Eagles had zero 1,000-yard guys. Not just on the ground.
I would not be surprised if the two running backs who replaced Dalvin Cook last year end up on the 49ers. I could see Latavius Murray as a free agent, you know, ending up in San Francisco. That'd be a perfect spot.
And we know how successful that was, that duo. It was very successful. And Murray surprised
me.
And
Shanahan
will
say, I'm so excited about what we can do with this guy as a goal line runner and an interior smasher.
And we'll all laugh about that.
Yeah.
Because he can't be too excited about what Latavius Murray can bring to the table, despite Latavius Murray being pretty successful last year with the Vikings, almost a touchdown per game.
He's like the running back version of Jimmy Graham. He could just lean into the end zone because he's so big.
He could just lean in and just fall over. There's still some guys out there. I know DeMarco Murray is still out there. You talked about Seattle just being patient. That's what the Eagles, and back to the Eagles again for a second. That's what they did last year, just patient, let all the guys pay up. They get LeGarrette Blount on cheap. They get Chris Long on cheap. So Murray is still out there. LeGarrette Blount is still out there. And that's basic. No other bigger names. And there's like Darren Sproles. Guys are waiting for to see if he can recover from his injury.
Darren Sproles might be waiting for a long time.
He might be done. Yeah. I think someone will give him a shot, but he could be done.
Murray,
we only got about him.
The Lions, yeah.
Gore at the Lions, and Murray was visiting the Lions too. The Lions' issue's been obviously they've won their last 100-yard rusher was Reggie Bush, and I believe Stafford has had like a dozen of them over the course of his career. I don't know how many Frank Gore is going to be able to get him, but certainly we know he's durable. We got about a minute, Scott. Is off the top of your
Alfred
head is
Morris
there a landing
is
spot
there.
For yeah, Alfred Morris? I guess is DeMarco Murray. Is there a landing spot for him? Any team that jumps out and you're just like, they need DeMarco Murray. To me, it's Detroit. I mean, we'd rather have DeMarco Murray than Frank Gore.
They already signed Gore. I think Seattle is the spot. Although they will have Chris Carson. I will think they do have Chris Carson coming back too, though. So that's something to consider.
And he impressed me, Scott.
Yeah.
Maybe we'll do a little more Chris Carson before we get into some baseball. It's Roto Experts. Scott Angle, the Hall of Famer, myself, Chris Meany. We'll be back. One more segment here. Roto Experts.
Skix sneakers are taking over tailgates and alumni homes across America. Skix canvas high top, low top, slip-on, and kids tennis style sneakers designed in officially licensed college colors and logos is a must-have for every college fan's wardrobe. Fun, fashionable, and comfortable, whether you're at the big game or watching the game at home, Skix helps fans perform better. Go to Skix.com and use promo code FNTSY for 15% off your pair now. That's Skix.com. Skix sneakers, the soul of a true fan.
Line Blinded by the Lights to get us through this last segment here on your Friday. It's Roto Experts, a classic for sure. Talking to a classic, the Hall of Famer, Scott Angle, joins me. Jake Seeley is not with us. That's all right. We're getting by just fine. The Roto Experts exclusive Edge package. If you don't already have it, I'm telling you guys, you are missing out. MLB opening day. It's just right around the corner here. It gets me fired up. So you got to head to rotoexperts.com. Exclusive Edge Fantasy Baseball Package to get it right now. This year's version is new. It's improved. More analysis than ever, including an all-day chat channel, which I think is pretty cool, especially for guys who are into daily stats, projections, and improved cheat sheet generator. You can get rankings from all the top rank analysis. Jake Seeley, tips from award winner Tim McCullough. You got insight, of course, from Hall of Famer Scott Angle, who I'm talking to right now. And all you got to do is enter the code FNTSY, and then you get your Roto Experts exclusive Edge Fantasy Baseball package. The promo, again, FNTSY. Scott, I know you've contributed a ton in this package. Is there something you want to share with maybe the listeners and myself, and something that, you know, maybe that stands out to you that you're proud of?
Yeah, the Fantasy Baseball Insider Series, which actually won an FSWA award last year for Best Baseball Ongoing Series from the FSWA. First installment is in now, where I talk to people anonymously, inside the game, close to the game, even players, and they give me their unfiltered takes on certain players. And interesting perspectives on the Mets and the NL East to start out.
Nice. Okay, yeah. Head to rotoexperts.com for the exclusive Edge Fantasy Baseball package. Matt Harvey, bouncing back?
Basically, the take on him was that he's got to get that Dark Knight mentality out of his head. It's all between the ears. When he realizes that he's no longer a superhero sort of ace and comes to terms with that and realizes he can still be a very good pitcher and just has to concentrate on getting guys out instead of dominating him, he should be able to be a very serviceable fantasy pitcher.
Yeah, I would agree with that for sure. I want to see him get back, man. Just so dominant. I don't know if he can get back to when the Mets made their run to the World Series.
It's never going to happen. The velocity's not the same.
It's not the same. You're right. And some of these pitchers, they lose it, and then they make adjustments. I mean, we've seen some guys make adjustments over the year, Burley and Weaver, with some of their velocity. So we'll see if that can happen with Matt Harvey. We'll get into some more baseball in a second, but in the break, Scott, I didn't give you much time to talk about DeMarco Murray, but, you and I were chatting just briefly about a couple other landing spots, and Chris Carson came up. Tampa Bay is an option. We mentioned, the hamster gone from that team now. I don't think Peyton Barber, maybe they draft a guy, certainly, but Murray is still out there. And I want to get your thoughts on Chris Carson, because Chris Carson, I was out of the trio between Jake and I and Pizapia, I was impressed from day one from Chris Carson. I was like, man, that guy runs hard, physical. He looks really good, explosive. And then he suffered the injury. I think that this guy can be a complete running back. What's your thoughts on Carson? Obviously, it's a significant injury, but heading into this season, is this a guy that you think can handle a full workload? I know the line and some question marks there, but I want to get your take, because you've watched him more than a lot of people have.
The thing that was most impressive about it is he was running well when Seattle's offensive line was at its worst, even before they acquired Dwayne Brown. That's probably the most impressive thing. Now, this is a big if. If the Seahawks would have their way, it would be Carson and CJ Procise. But Procise can't stay healthy. He's so explosive, but he's so frustrating. And, maybe they want to do that. Or, maybe that's why they haven't signed Murray. And another potential landing spot for Murray could be Washington as well, because I don't think they believe in Samaje Perine being the guy.
Yeah, that's a good point. I don't think they do either. And, Gruden was really kind of forced to play him, Scott, at times when Rob Kelly was hurt. He wanted to play Kelly. He was very vocal about just experience, even Kelly only having 1 year. and he wanted to play the experienced guy in Kelly, but Kelly just couldn't stay on the football field, and P. Ryan just he certainly didn't live up to any expectations. Let's switch over to baseball. We only have a few minutes. I want to get your thoughts on Zach Greinke. There's some news that surfaced yesterday. He's likely out for opening day, dealing with a groin injury. This is a quote here. Mindset is not to have him play catch up for one day during the season, so they don't want to get behind the eight ball. If he misses one start, two starts, it's fine. Greinke bounced back last season, Scott. He was one of the guys that you got at a discount. And 2 years ago, people were still drafting him as a top 10 pitcher despite his phenomenal season with the Dodgers and the move to Arizona. The first year was not kind to him. Last year, he was good. And there was a lot of talk about velocity being down and he was struggling. People were shying away from him in drafts. He was fine. Is Greinke, hearing this news, I know it's just one start. Does that matter? Are you in on Greinke or not? And what we said yesterday, if guys with Cruz, if they're going to continue to fall at a discount because he's going to miss one or two starts, that doesn't bother me at all. I will draft Greinke. But what's your thoughts on Greinke? And let's kind of touch on this whole Arizona pitching staff here because they're getting a little bit of buzz, Scott.
Yeah, it's with Greinke. It's like you say, you know, this weekend people are drafting and they'll think in the now and they'll put that together with the recent reports of the velocity dropping, even though he hit 92 in his last spring training outing. And a lot of people, times people will say, I don't want a guy who's draft injured right now. So that gives you an opportunity to wait on him and then capitalize. We heard the drop velocity thing last year. It didn't happen either. This will push him back a little bit, but I'm not worried about him whatsoever.
No, I'm not worried about him at all either. And I mean, this is maybe a bad thing to say, but don't take it the wrong way, people. But I like to hear things like this, especially with guys that I want. I mean, if it's not a significant injury going to draft day, people shy away from it all the time. And we talked about Cruz yesterday. I get Cruz two rounds later because, one, people are thinking the drop-off is going to come, and it eventually will. But until I see it, I'm going to take him. And then I hear grade one strain. Maybe he misses a couple weeks. I have no problem sticking him on the DL and rolling that way. It's not the worst. Grade two, obviously a little worse. And that's what Mark Trumbo is dealing with. Grade two quad strain. 2 years ago, this guy was off the charts in home run department across the board, just balling out. A disappointing season from him last year. He is what he is. He's a guy who's not going to give you any average. He strikes out. He can provide some pop. It's like a lot of guys really in this Baltimore lineup. Chris Davis is another one of them. I'm not even going to ask if you're a Trumbo guy, but when I get your thoughts on maybe this Orioles lineup and the scope, Manny Machado, maybe the only two you care about, I kind of like Tim Beckham. I kind of like Tim Beckham in leagues with you know, a middle and a quarter infield spot, deeper leagues. Tim Beckham is somebody who is highly touted at one point, Scott, a top draft pick, didn't work out, flipped, you know, midway through the season in Baltimore, got that top spot in that lineup, which is a nice lineup. We'll joke about their pitching, how it's awful. They're going to have to score 10 runs a game to get W's. But Beckham on the top of that lineup can provide a little bit of speed, some power, not hurt you crazy about average. Are you feeling Tim Beckham maybe a little bit? I'm not saying that he's off the charts. You go into your draft and you want to target him, but let's talk about this Orioles lineup a little bit.
Late around middle infield type, you know, I'm certainly feeling what you're saying there. It's you know, the guy I like is Trey Mancini. You know, I think he came out of nowhere last year. And, you know, is there a little bit even more upside than maybe what we saw? And then you're looking at a second catcher maybe. Caleb Joseph, you know, this is a guy that, you know, was originally talked about as a prospect. But in just 254 at-bats last year, he had 8 homers. You know, maybe he can give you a little pop and a decent batting average is your number two catcher. So, yeah, I'm sold on Jonathan Scope for sure.
Oh yeah, Jonathan Scope is a terrific ball player. I'm definitely in with you on that. Scope. I mean, on Machado too. Obviously, you can say about Machado. Machado's great.
So
he struggled
Aaron
at times
Judge
last season,
yeah,
and he's fine. Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, Aaron Judge, get me a little Machado. This guy's gone, right? Yeah. Like, if you're Baltimore, you probably flip him. You're not going to. Let's be honest. You're not going to compete. You're not going to be able to compete inside that division. You get the Yankees and the Red Sox and the pitching that they have and Dylan Bundy and Kevin Gausman. Those are the guys who have the upside. But Chris Tillman, Andrew Kashner, like, come on. Mike Wright, these guys are – they're not going to be able to get it done. There was a streak, Scott, last year of I think 20-some-odd starts in a row where their starting pitchers had allowed at least 5 runs. And that, I mean, they're on the same path, I would say. This is a team that I thought would maybe try to get a pitcher. Cobb is still, maybe they get Cobb, who knows. But this is a team that's probably not going to compete. So Manny Machado, yes or no, does he finish the season a member of the Baltimore Orioles?
No.
No. No. I would agree.
I don't think he goes to the Yankees, though. I don't think he does.
I don't think he does either.
But all the payroll they added with Stanton, et cetera.
It's tough.
Look, Hank Steinbrenner used to be not like his dad, but now he's turning into him with the Steinbrenner family, and he can never rule the Yankees out. But I just think he's going to end up somewhere else.
I think he's going to end up somewhere else, too. I think the Yankees, it always just seems like a good landing spot to talk about because, obviously, A, the money that they spend and the pinstripes and the legacy and the team that they're building right now. But the pieces, they have some prospects too, Scott. Like, they have some pieces that they could flip. And some, you know, Torres is a great player that's not even going to start with the club, right? I mean, Gleyber Torres is a nice, fine piece. They got some good, young prospects that they could deal for a move for Manny Machado. But I'm with you. I think he's gone. But I don't think he's going to be a member of the Yankees. Next year is going to be exciting, Scott. There's a lot of big-time free agents out there.
You're talking about Bryce Harper. Yeah, I know Yankee Harper, fans are fantasizing about Stanton, Harper, and you judge
that,
all.
That's
the
not going to happen,
outfield,
right?
But I don't think it's going to happen. It's, you know, the a lot of Yankee fans talk about, oh, let's wait till 2019 for Bryce Harper. I think you got Giancarlo Stanton instead a year early.
Yeah, I mean, there's nothing wrong with Stanton. You know, obviously, you could do just fine with Stanton. I don't think Harper wants to shave his beard, though. Like, he can't go to the Yankees. He can't be clean-shaven every day. That's not what he wants. You think he stays with Washington, though? I don't think he does.
I don't think he does either. No.
I don't think they... I think they'll offer him a respectable contract, but... I think he'll just probably want to move on from them. You know, we were talking over-unders yesterday, and I know you're a Mets guy. The Nationals, this is a team that just can't get over the hump, Scott. They just always seem to disappoint. Now, I was an Expos fan growing up, and I've been to the Big O dozens of times, and when this team left, I did my own thing. I followed some Expos guys that went to the Angels. So I'm an Angels guy. I follow Bartolo Colon, Vlad Guerrero, Meister Esteras, Orlando Cabrera. A lot of these guys went
Ian
over
Desmond
and I just continued to.
Was yet, in the Expo it, system. He was
he
like
was,
the last guy drafted to be on the Nationals until they let him go.
Until they let him go, yeah. And my old man followed along with the Nationals and he gets frustrated every year. What is it just because they just match up against the Dodgers and it's the Cubs? Like, what do the Nationals need to do? Like, they got arms. They got a great lineup. Is it, to me, it's the bullpen. Have they done enough?
They've never been clutch.
They've never been clutch, and they've never had that bullpen arm. Like, yeah, they get the Doolittle.
Am I wrong?
Mets,
recall, like, a big Bryce Harper moment in the postseason where he's really delivered?
Yeah, there was one, I think, maybe like a 2-home run game, but other than that, there's nothing that really jumps out at me.
Yeah,
there's nothing like they had the pitching. It's the bullpen really that, you know, that's kind of been their Achilles heel that really hasn't, you know, put them over the top.
Of course, now naturally you fear Harper with the game on the line, but they're in the postseason. You know who has really delivered for them hitting wise.
Yeah, no one. I mean, Murphy did the damage with the Mets.
Yeah.
I mean,
and
they acquired him.
I remember that 2015 runs, the Mets were in it with the Nationals, and Harper, like, had a horrible, like, 6 games against the Mets, and the Nationals collapsed.
And that was it, yeah.
I vehemently against him winning the MVP because I said, your MVP has to deliver. And in those big games against the Mets, he was bad.
You're right. Your MVP has to deliver. I mean, I remember with the Yankees and everyone being just hard on A-Rod at a time. Now, he stepped up. There was, you know, a couple runs where he was fine. But early on, when A-Rod was with the Yankees, Scott, I mean, this guy was striking a lot. He wasn't putting the bat on the ball, and he wasn't getting it done. It's such a short series, you know, especially early on in those you only get a few plate appearances at bats to make the most of it. And you're right. When Harper is just a guy who just hasn't showed up in those. But I feel like they'll have one more legitimate shot here, right? That's fair to say that they kind of own that division again this year, and they'll have another legitimate shot to make it happen. Yeah.
I see them as the best team in the division. The Mets could be the second, but they need everybody to stay healthy, and that's a big if with them. Otherwise, Philadelphia could pass them by.
So we had that conversation yesterday with Cardano and Tony. We're filling in for Gabe and Cam, and we were doing some over-unders. We only got about a minute or two here, but we were going over some over-unders, and the Mets came up 81 wins. Now, that's one I think I would just take over, Scott, just because of the upside alone with the Mets. Like, if they can stay healthy, like, if they can keep the pitching staff, I know Mats and Harvey aside, they got whatever. If Syndergaard and DeGrom pitch all year, and Cespedes can give me 500 plate appearances, I know that might be pushing it, but give me 500. And some of the other guys that they have, and some young pieces that they can bring up and play consistently, I think I would just take the over on the 81 just on upside alone, Scott.
Yeah, I think so. It's like you think the Mets are a football team, like as much as their players get injured. But if everybody's healthy, you know, the first two in the pitching rotation, you know, Syndergaard, DeGrom, expect good years from Harvey's. Harvey's like the wild card. Vargas could be nifty, but there's a few things that got to break their way. But I would take over.
I would take over as well. Scott, always a pleasure, man. Have a great weekend. Good luck in your drafts.
You too.
And we will chat on Monday. Thanks for tuning in, guys. Have a great weekend. Talk soon.